This is Dean Kuntz. Welcome to my podcast. I thought I'd talk today a little bit about the way I approach writing, and I'm often asked by readers a standard set of questions, including where do you get your ideas, and I dealt with that in a previous podcast. They also ask, how do you write a novel? What is your method? And I often get asked this by people who want to write, but sometimes by people who don't want to write or are just curious about it. And when I tell them how I write, they usually are astonished. They think I've lost my mind. And, of course, there's a lot of people in my daily life think that's true. But I write a novel by starting on the first page, as every writer does, but I don't write a first draft and then go back and fix it up. I work on the first page until I can't get it any better, and that means 20, 30, 40 drafts of a page. And when I've got that page down, then I move on to page two, and I go through 20, 30, 40 drafts of page two before I go to page three. And I work my way through the novel. I say it's sort of like the way coral reefs are built by the millions and millions of little skeletons of sea mollusks, and I build a book very much in that same pattern. It's difficult, but at the same time, it gives me plenty of time to think ahead to the problems that are awaiting me. And it also gets me to follow the characters through the story in something kind of like real time. I'm with a character in a scene that takes minutes. I'm with him days, and I scrutinize every minute of that scene. And it makes it more involving for me. That might sound to you like I would be bored out of my mind, but in fact, I like the English language. And moving through the story at a very slow pace allows my subconscious to be working on problems that are coming far ahead. One day I was working on The Face, a novel that I was enjoying very much, and sometimes they're not that enjoyable. Even if the prose turns out all right, it wasn't a lot of fun getting it to turn out right. But in this case, it was coming out well, and I was happy with it. But out of nowhere, as I was writing The Face, a line came into my head, and the line was, "My name is Odd Thomas. I lead an unusual life." And I recognized that as the opening to a novel. Not perhaps as profound as Call Me Ishmael, but a similar kind of opening to a novel. And it had nothing to do with The Face, and I had no idea where that came from or what it meant or why my mind would be throwing to me something not related to what I was writing. But I turned around and wrote it down so I wouldn't lose it, and the next thing I know, even though I don't write longhand, I had filled 16 or 18 pages of a yellow notepad with the first scene of a novel, and it all written longhand. And I heard Odd Thomas's voice so clearly in my head that when I later went back to fix that chapter, I didn't have to do the 30 and 40 drafts a page I usually do. I might have gotten away on average with 10. And I was so excited by the idea of the character and what he was telling me about himself that I wanted to stop right there and write the novel. But I had to finish The Face. There were bills to be paid, an angry publisher with a deadline to meet. I'm not angry until I didn't meet it, but angry as soon as I didn't meet it. So I put Odd Thomas aside and went on and finished The Face, and then was hugely excited about getting back to it. Now, Odd Thomas, when it was published, brought the most mail of any novel I've ever published in the first year. We got over 50,000 letters from readers, and a book on its first year usually draws around 10, 15,000 letters. So it was an avalanche of mail, and we did answer all of them. But I knew there was something very special about the character of Odd Thomas. And I actually knew what it was, and I'm not sure that all of you who write me about Odd Thomas, and you write and say why you love him, you think he's very funny, you think he's very sweet, you think he's very genuine, he strikes you as a real person, you admire him, you admire his values, you admire his attitude toward life. But the thing I think, and I read this through the lines in your letters, and it's why I like Odd Thomas, the thing I think makes him shine as a character is humility. It's very unusual for the lead character of a series of thrillers to be a very humble human being. But Odd isn't just humble. Odd is on a journey of ever-increasing humility. And by the time you've read the third book in the series, Brother Odd, which comes out at the end of this year, you'll have recognized how far he's gone down the road of humility. And that's a kind of fascinating thing, because he's not a fellow who knows he can handle anything, who can handle any weapon or deal with any villain. He's not a police officer. He's not an FBI agent. He's simply a fry cook who has this very odd talent. He sees dead people and feels driven to do something to bring justice to them, often because they were killed and their killer has gotten away with it. But his humility and the closed, narrow, simple life he lives makes him a very appealing character to me, and I think that is the key thing that so many of you have responded to. I've just finished, or about to finish, the third book in the Odd series, and I'm telling myself there's probably going to be at least a fourth, because I've now got him at a monastery high in the California mountains where he's living as a visitor and going deeper into a path of humility and hoping for a little peace in his life. But with Odd Thomas, there's never going to be peace because trouble will follow him anywhere he goes. And this book has been one where I do the 20, 30, 40 drafts a page. It didn't come as easily as the first, but the character shines, and I still love him in this one. And another thing that people ask me about in these books, and you'll see it in the Odd Thomas books, but you'll see it very obviously in a couple of other books I mentioned, is imagery. I'm noted for the imagery in the books, for the metaphors and similes, for the imagery, for the visualization of things. Readers write and say, your novels are like reading a movie. I can see them in my head when I'm reading them. Well, that's because I see them in my head while I'm writing them, I think. But I've had a number of you say, well, I noticed something about, for instance, in Velocity, there are all these images, and so many of them have to do with birds. There's all these metaphors about birds and similes about birds, and I know that means something. Why is that the case? And I would say to you, well, think about the story. Billy Wiles in Velocity is a fellow who's leading a very constricted life. He doesn't allow himself a full, free life because terrible things had happened to him in childhood. He's closed down. He lives a life that he can control. And what do birds represent? They represent freedom more than almost anything else because they can fly. And Billy in Velocity is a character who is moving on his way to a fuller life, and by the end of the book, who is going to have literally spread his wings. So there are a lot of bird metaphors, but that's only one of seven or eight reasons there are all those metaphors. And when you read The Husband, you'll notice there's an awful lot of metaphor and similes that deal with plants, flowers and trees and whatnot. Well, he's a gardener, for one thing, but there's other reasons for it. And it's these kind of considerations when you're writing a novel, these kind of things that readers aren't really supposed to think about or notice, but that affect them on a subconscious level, that put them into a different mood than they might have if you'd use different similes and different metaphors, that make the writing of them so much fun and so interesting and such a challenge creatively. And so when readers do notice that sort of thing, I'm always happy that they do, because it means they're paying close attention. If you'd like to know more about me and my books, why don't you come to the website, deankunst.com. Thank you.